It's May 26th, 2024, and welcome to episode 276 of the Retro Computing Roundtable.
Well, it seems the Emerald City is far behind me now, and my world has changed back from black to white. But no matter where I go, there's just one thing I'd like to know. Will I ever find my way back to Oz? Will I ever find...
The RCR is a podcast about retro computer news, nostalgia, collecting, and things of 1976, I think. So I'm Paul Hagstrom, near Boston. I am joined by two retro computing enthusiasts this week. We have Carrington Vanston in Toronto. How are you?
I am indeed in Toronto, as it says on screen. I'm doing great.
Oh, it does in fact say that, yes. Octo.
No second T.
And also joining us is Blake Patterson in the DC area. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Nice and warm and, yep, just doing that DC thing here. So, all good.
Doing that DC thing? Like, politics? What's the DC thing?
I think that's batteries.
Oh, right. Versus the AC thing? I'm up here being all alternating current.
Not doing the AC thing anymore. How about you?
Yeah, all is fine. Summer has arrived. And with that, you know, sort of all the different things that I'd postponed are now due.
And now you're totally
yes.
Pwned.
That's right. Okay. Anyway, yes. So we've been following the years with our episode numbers, and that would bring us to 1976. So things of 1976. And not that much had been kind of happening recently, but I think things are starting to happen in 1976. So we'll probably have a little bit of trouble actually getting to all of the things. I think maybe one thing that happened in 1976 is I think the Z80 was introduced.
Woohoo! Much to the joy of future arcade games everywhere.
Yeah. It went on sale in July 1976. I actually didn't realize that until fairly recently that, last decade or so, that the Z80 was the arcade game.
Many stand-up arcade games use that. I only really did, when I used to do a podcast with M. McGinnis, that's when I kind of discovered we would talk about the various arcade games we would review, and so many of them were Z80s. I was like, oh, what do you know?
Yeah, because I always think of that as not a particularly powerful thing, but I guess if it's focused on just driving Pac-Man around.
Mm-hmm.
Take that, you Z80-powered computers. You're not powerful. So says Paul.
Right.
I've learned a good bit in, I guess, the last decade or so, at least more than I had done before, of the kind of over the UK and Europe. I guess, you know, a lot of the machines over there were Z80 based, and I think I only have one. I personally only have one. Actually, it's Earl's favorite, the PX8, a little CPM laptop has a Z80. But yep, arcades as well.
Hmm. You don't have a card in your Apple II?
I don't. I actually. But that's on the list. I do want to add one. I bought that. I think I've shown that external card cage that I acquired a couple of years ago for the 2E, and that was to move things around to make room for a Z80 card. I just haven't grabbed one yet. There are two CPUs that I have very few of in the house. One of them is a Z80, and one of them is a 6809. And yeah, the Vectrex is 6809.
Yeah, the only thing I really know about the Z80, to be honest, like compared to, I guess, the Intel stuff, is I think it was supposed to be, it like had a bunch of block I/O stuff and block move things and search instructions, like in the instruction set, that made it good for certain things, and maybe that was helpful for arcade things, sort of that. And it was something mm-hmm. to do with its, I don't know, interrupt was cool, and the big deal, everyone, I remember back in the day, people talk about how you could like erase the program counter or whatever, but keep everything else going. And that was supposedly useful in some way, but like you wouldn't reset the data, but I don't know. Like, I know so little about that chip.
I think I actually have quite a few things that run on it, but you know, they're all in the someday project pile. So
Yeah, the I think, and of course, all the CPM machines. I happen to have.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, CPM. I mean, that was the. I guess that became the. The go-to, like K-Pro, in my mind, I'm probably the only one, but K-Pro in my mind is like the de facto CPM machine. I had these several local friends that, like, their dads had, you know, different K-Pros, and so I'd go play with those, and they were all Z80, and they were cool machines. Nice.
I was never exposed to K-Pro stuff back in the day, ever. Yeah, it was nice. Completely not in my world until, like, the 2000s when I heard about them.
It was interesting. My wife, actually, her father, her late father is a, he wasn't like a tech guy, but he was ahead of his time as far as adopting like new whiz bang things. And they had I think the first K-Pro, which I guess was a K-Pro 2. So my wife in like middle school was doing like WordStar homework on that thing. And they ended up with like, there was that really funky K-Pro. I guess it was a x86 laptop, but it was super cool with this removable keyboard. I remember her brother had one of those he took to college. So they had all these K-Pros, and it pains me terribly that like they're not sure what happened to them. And so like I said, you're going to let me in the attic. And so I've been up in that attic like 5, 6, 7 times, you know, like looking just to make sure because it could be up there. But I've never found any of them. But
I remember that one, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was one that looked like a turtle or something.
It was like a clamshell laptop, but you could take the keyboard like out of it.
It was on a 2000.
Cord, and then it had like a flip up floppy disk or something and a tiny screen. It was a weird form. I remember that format. Yeah,
it was. Like the, I think it was called the K-Pro 2000, and it was I remember
2000 pounds.
It had like a rubber bumper. It looked kind of like it had angles, and it was not painted. It was sort of anodized. I think it looks sort of like a Tesla Cybertruck flat, and it had a rubber bumper. And I remember the guys he went to school with.
Oh yeah, it's on screen. This one, right?
The guys he went to school with were like amazed. Like they weren't computer people, but it's like, what is this thing? This is crazy. And
the future. Oh yeah, look at that. The flip up floppy.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was just robust as heck.
But that was not Z80. I think that's just a DOS, you know, it's a DOS machine. But
look at that tiny screen though, and all that bevel around it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
in the year 2000.
And I guess maybe you were gonna lead into this, Paul, but I guess rather recently, and I think maybe this was talked about, they've ended the fabrication of the Z80 here in the last, week or something like that? Last 2 weeks or something?
Really? I didn't know that.
We talked about that, didn't we, at the last show? Maybe it was longer.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, it was probably actually the most recent show.
Yeah.
Oh, I wasn't on it.
2 weeks ago in this world time. Yeah, I think Quinn was saying, if I recall, that you can't get the discrete. You could, until then, you could get the discrete actual a Z80 chip just right there and put it in something and use it. But I believe, is it the case that it still is available in certain SoCs? Is that what I'm remembering, Paul? Or?
Yeah, I think that was the, you know, it's the, particularly the 40-pin DIP.
Right.
You know, format is not going to be available after, I think, mid-June, June 14th or something.
Okay.
But that there are, the architecture exists on other things that you could conceivably adapt to plug in, right?
I think we looked at, I think Quinn pointed to like Mouser or something, and they had like a diminishing stock of them. Like they still had a few, but it was not to be replaced. That's sort of a timely, I guess we're looking at bookends of the Z80 and 76 and 2024.
Yeah. Also on the screen is the TRS-80, mm-hmm. which is another sort of obvious consumer of the Z80.
But that's a next year thing. That's a Holy Trinity thing.
We'll
talk about that in the next show.
We'll
finally decide which of those three was the best, the definitive answer from RCR.
That's right.
We're going with that. But,
we'll go with which company is still here,
and which one's really still here, and which one,
your
name alone. Cool.
The other thing that, a couple of things happened in the Homebrew Computer Club in 1976. So, one of them was we had a fairly famous letter that Bill Gates wrote to the hobbyist community.
Saying, I will one day be richer than all of you. He signed it in gold in a photocopy of his butt. It's a very famous letter. I believe it ends, suck it, nerds, Gates. That version sold for a lot at auction, let me tell you.
But yeah, I think as I recall the story, it was essentially that they, you know, made the basic for the Altair and then everybody made copies of it. And they weren't getting any money. So it's an early rant against software piracy. And I think actually the article said something about, like they were getting royalties or something from Altair on this. And because everybody was copying it, they weren't getting any money. So the article said something about renegotiating with Altair to get a sort of a lump sum, which was the opposite of the thing that made him rich later, right, as I recall. So that was when that was, 1976. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I always associate with 1976 is this, the Apple One.
Well, the Apple Uno, later sold at auction for $800 billion.
Yeah.
Boy, there was that time where those things were just selling like so much money. I think we've passed peak Apple One though. If you still have one, you missed your chance to sell it for a ton.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, yeah. So the Apple One, Steve Wozniak showed this to the Homebrew Computer Club, and they started selling it.
I thought it was Steve Jobs said, "Hey, look what I made by myself! Look at this amazing thing." I call it the Jobs. Totally alone.
Anyway, yeah, I don't have much to say about that. You know, I don't have one. Nobody I know has one.
I've seen one, though, because they got brought to Kansas Fest. So I got to see one in person, an actual Apple One. So I remember being up in the lounge upstairs, and me and like two other people were kind of looking at Apple One, was just set up there and hooked up to the TV, and they all left, and it was just me sitting there playing on the Apple One, which is crazy. Like, welcome to the Apple One. Yeah. We just left their Apple One up there and walked away, and I just played with it for a while. And it's like, cool. And this was before they were selling for like bonkers money, I think, but still crazy.
I felt like I saw, as we discussed earlier, I live in the DC area, and we, you know, with some frequency make it into the DC Smithsonian museums. So I've seen, you know, American History Museum, what they've got, as far as Apple stuff, they show, you know, they'll have a Apple II, and you know, I think they have a Lisa. They bring them out, and there are all these you know, display cases, and occasionally there'll be some electronics. I think there was an early Newton prototype I saw, and shared the photo a few months ago. But I feel like when I didn't live here and I took a field trip, you know, like when I was in like elementary school, that there was an Apple One. But then that would be too, maybe that's even too close to it. Or I feel like I saw it at one point at the American History Museum, Smithsonian in DC, but only then. And so I don't know if that, I feel like it might be a false memory, because why wouldn't they show it more prevalently and more frequently if they've got that?
Yeah. Also, if you were that young, I mean, it isn't that sort of like the computer of 3 years ago? I mean, like in a sense, yeah. Isn't that, I mean, like,
this would have been like 85. Yeah. So it's, okay. You know, it's not that.
So it could have also just been an early, early Apple II, not in a, with an open case or whatever. And as a young kid, you're like, I don't know. It's.
Yeah. But then I'm half remembering like that, you know, there's the several wooden cases that are almost archetypal for the Apple One. I don't know. If anybody, you know, I'd be curious if anyone listening has ever seen that at the Smithsonian in D.C., I'd be curious to hear about it. But, I mean, I know they've got they have like a Alto and some old items of relevance in the computing, early computing period on display now, but not an Apple One among them. But anyway.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to know, like, which of the things that are available today or came out, you know, in the last 5 years are the things that are that'll have the impact that will make them worthy of a museum. Let's see, what else?
What else happened in 76?
This is one of those complex stories about, trying to pin it down to a year, but I think the first Cray 1 was installed. So, in 1976.
I would redecorate my whole house around a Cray if I had one. I'd happily just salt the earth, get rid of everything else, and have that in the middle of the room.
Oh, yeah.
Cray. Happy yeah. man. The Cray one was gorgeous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I honestly probably don't care that much about the computer part inside, you know?
No, I would just want it as a structural item. It's just, it's beautiful. Yeah. I just keep it as a dresser and store all my clothing in the bottom part of it. Right. Turn it into a hot tub.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's true that I would never use the computer. I'm not sure how I would feel about someone gutting it to put in, like, hot tub stuff.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I probably wouldn't. It's funny, on screen it says eventually 80 Cray ones were sold. I'm like, only 80? It's crazy that that's the thing I even knew about when I was young, if they made 80 right. or something. Like, why was that even on my radar? I guess because it was, like, cool looking and everybody talked about how mm-hmm. it's got a great name, a nice short name, and it's super mm-hmm. fast. And it's like, it hit all the marketing things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cray sounds crazy.
It sounds great. It sounds Cray.
Somehow. And yeah, I remember at I don't think it was a it probably wasn't a Cray one, but I remember again in the 80s I went to my asking about it. My father worked at NASA Langley down in Southern Virginia, and they had a Cray of some sort, and so I was able to go see you know, like the area where it was, and they had the cool, obviously for, you know, display effects. But it was two panes of glass that were close to each other. They were about 3 or 4 feet off the ground, like windows. But the distance between the capillary action would cause the coolant, liquid fluorocarbon, to rise up and pour over the sides without any sort of active motivation. It was some sort of a capillary thing that was, or at least assist without complete active motivation. And it was kind of, you know, like a little display that was, you're seeing the coolant, but it was like this whiz bang thing that was in this dark room, you know, where they had the computer. And, but I don't think it was a Cray one. It didn't look like that, but it was a Cray.
Okay. Let's see. One other thing that happened was, Queen Elizabeth sent an email.
Oh, one wants you to forward this on.
I believe Paul is showing a photograph of that taking place. Am I correct? That event.
Queen sends her first email, causes World War III. Queen spams the Russians.
I can't quite make out the type of terminal she's using there in the photograph.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it looks like she's doing this at like a museum or something, but yeah, it's there's some sort of display, but I mean, I guess this is a big thing. But
it's probably Z80.
The funny thing is, before she sent the email, she smacked a bottle of champagne off the side, and they're like, you don't have to do that every time.
Right. March 26th, 1976, the Queen visited the Royal Signals and Radar Establishment, making her the first royal to send an email.
Cool. Okay.
Okay, I think maybe the last thing we can mention here is the 5 1/4 inch disc.
Never heard
Shugart
of it.
Shugart introduced the 5 1/4 inch disc drive in 1976, the SA-400.
I wonder how tempted they were to make it not 5 1/4. Such an awkward size. Pick 5, pick 6, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
5 1/4.
Yeah, I wonder about that.
There's something in metric, man. Americans.
I it never occurred to me to wonder what the rationale was for that, but I mean, you know, bigger is better, I suppose, for storage, but smaller is better because bigger is bigger.
It is indeed the case that bigger is bigger. You have really caught on to something there.
Yeah. So yeah, but I wonder how they balanced that at 5 1/4.
Well, maybe they used cardboard cutouts and they like got a whole stack of cardboard cutouts of different sizes, and then they built, you know, disc boxes around it, and they wanted to see which one would be the just the right size to accept that Apple logo sticker right on the front.
It'd be hilarious if they just flung them, and whichever one went farthest is what they picked or something. That's how I would pick. So 5 1/4 inches is like 120, 130 millimeters. They could have picked something like that instead. Americans would be like, I'm never using this thing. I have no idea how big it is. Mm-hmm. It could be a mile long for all I know.
Right.
It looks like in 76, Diffie-Hellman was as well. So like that's the first public key thing I ever heard about. That was 76. Yeah, yeah. Wow. I remember somebody explaining that to me with the whole, which everyone learns the first way, the whole mixing paint analogy. It took me so long to get my head around that. I was like, I don't understand how this works at all. Mm-hmm. I did not understand encryption at all when I first encountered it.
Yeah, and I, not having ever done the like an actual CS degree, I never did in fact hear that story. So these names aren't familiar to me.
But... Oh, this was like when I first heard about before even. Yeah, I got a CS degree, but before that, like in high school, or whatever, somebody was trying to explain to me, like public key encryption and various mm-hmm. things. Is okay, you know, got two people and they have the paint. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's just like it just didn't get it. I'm mm-hmm. slow. It's difficult to make me learn things.
Yeah, I see. So Martin Hellman, Rolf Merkel, Woodfield Diffie at Stanford in 1976. Public key cryptography. Yeah. Yeah, I guess that probably had some influence. Maybe, arguably, as much influence as the 5 1/4 inch disk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Maybe we have exhausted 1976 for now.
1976 was exhausting.
Yes.
Bill Gates keeps complaining and ripping off all his stuff.
Right. Bad, yes. I think it was in the US it was like the bicentennial or something. So
it would have been, yeah, because 1776, hey, it would have been a big year for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So there was, you know, whatever, red, white, and blue everywhere.
Of course they weren't going to do a metric disk size then. it should have been the size of a football. Is what the football disk, the biggest seller ever.
Yep. Sort of looks like a apple pie or whatever. Or a baseball.
It looks like a football. It tastes like apple pie. America. It makes the sound of eagle's wings when it turns on. Biggest, the ultimate American disc.
How big are CDs, by the way? I mean, in Canada? I always think of them as being approximately.
I've heard good things, though.
CDs?
CDs, approximately the same size, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, they must
have helped them a billion times. Yeah. You think I would know.
Yeah. I mean, I know that I can often use like CD storage cases for floppies and vice versa.
I guess, so it's 120 millimeters, so 4.7 that's 4.7 inches.
Yeah, 120 millimeters.
Okay. Yeah, I guess with the jewel cases, make them bigger.
Hmm.
Okay, let's see. So I guess we can move on to the items of interest in news. And Blake, you have the first of these.
I've only got the one today, but there was an interesting article about the game Riven over on Digital Antiquarian, which is a great kind of historical tech blog.
Great site, my goodness.
I love that blog. It's quality. But yeah, Riven just first, Myst came out in 1993, and it was, showcase game for CD-ROM, and famously, built basically with HyperCard, two brothers, Rand and Robin Miller, did the game themselves, did all the parts, kind of created everything in their little dev studio, and Myst was quite a big hit. Riven was a follow-up that came in 97. I think whereas Myst was one CD, Riven I think was like six. I have the box somewhere.
Something
I think like it's
that.
Six CDs. I actually never made it all the way through it. It's my sister. She's not a gamer, but she has played and replayed Riven like over the decades. She loves the game. It's anyway, the just kind of little back history. The article over at the Antiquarian talks about the creation of the game, and it goes into. It's just an interesting read. It's a lengthy read that talks about Myst, what it was, and how Riven is became what it set out to be, which is a mistier Myst. It's Myst harder. It's Myst harder, and there's talk about
Myst with a vengeance.
There was Myst with a vengeance.
Myst with a vengeance. Basically, that's exactly how he's describing it. Because it missed some opportunities in that it's sort of the same kind of embedded videos. It's not it didn't really go full you know, animation. The world is very similar, but the puzzles are very seamless, and it seeks and achieves, you know, to go further down that road. I thought it was interesting. Just it talks about you know, the ups and downs and some of the little details that went into the creation of it, and talks about the brothers, and it was just a very interesting read to me, because Myst was actually, for a long time, I know a lot of, you know, there's split opinions over Myst. My girlfriend and I played it, I think we, 17 hours, you know, over like 2 days, I think we, you know, were taking the notes and doing everything, and we solved it, and it was a very, very atmospheric and pleasant experience with the music and the, you know, the video, even though it was a postage stamp video, it made a, you know, it really, mm-hmm. I don't know, you really felt it's hard to convey today, but I really felt it. But, you know, that was the first thing I ever used the newly purchased CD-ROM drive for, my caddy loading CD drive on my, at the time I had a 486 PC, mm-hmm. and that's what I was playing it on. But anyway, it's a good read if you're interested at all or have any memories of Myst or Riven or, you know, Myst 3. You know, there were others that followed, and the article didn't really get into it. So it's not, you know, not breaking news, but I just thought it was a very nice read. Anytime anything comes out, as sounds like Carrington agrees, at the Digital Antiquarian, it is always worth a look. So, yeah, just wanted to share that. It's a fun one, so.
I think I have a couple of copies of Riven because one of them had a, like, it was on several discs and one of the discs didn't work. You know, okay. So I got another one, but it was, and I never got anywhere on it, but, you know, I walked around the beginning of it and marveled at its beauty. You know, it looks really nice.
Yeah. I found it much harder. I mean, it was harder to feel like I was making enough progress that I felt momentum, you know, and so I would kind of step away and come back, and I didn't really get hugely far into it, but I enjoyed the process. It makes me want to go back. I've got it on the shelf. Interestingly, your CD problem, it's similar, kind of funny. There's a follow-up to Myst, which is, I don't know, it's kind of, it's what it is, but it's called Real Myst. And it's, you know, it renders the world in, you know, 3D. I wasn't really interested in playing it again. I just wanted to see what the thing would look like around the corner. So I'd load it up and walk around the place, but I couldn't get that to work. And so I've got like four copies of that from the company. Turns out my CD-ROM drive and my Mac at that point, it was a Power Mac, was on the fritz. And so I actually have several copies of it because of hardware failure.
That's the problem
failure.
With Myst is there's so many versions of it. It's hard to know even which one to play. There's Masterpiece Edition and Myst VR and Myst 3D and Myst.
Yeah.
Oops, I missed again and whatever. Like,
yeah. I mean, I'd buy it again in VR. I mean, did you just say VR? If it's in VR, like,
I don't know. I was just throwing out stuff. I know
I wouldn't mind.
Could be VR.
You know, going and laying down.
Surprised. They just put it out over and over. Yeah.
You know, go lay down next to
I really
to
liked it. Back
the
in the day, man, I loved it. I played it. Finished it. I never played the rest of them, though. Never got into Riven or the rest of the games. So it's just missed one and done for me.
If you had VR, though, I mean, like, one of the things that I definitely liked about Myst was, you know, you can click at a place that's a little farther away and just go right there. And if VR means I'm going to have to walk all the way over there to flip the switch and then walk all the way back.
Yeah. I don't know. But have you tried Real Myst, the Doom Myst, basically?
I have. I think there are a couple that do 3D. I definitely have that one, though.
Yeah.
And I remember finding it kind of hard to control, but I didn't have that much patience for it.
It's Myst with a shotgun.
That's right. But, you know, there's a couple of little, I mean, I think, well, I know that, you know, the Miller brothers made their own little short 15-minute documentary about the making of Myst. I think they put it on the CD with Myst. And yeah, I mean, of course, they talk about how they went into, you know, when they're rendering the world and, you know, the wireframes for the views, you know, talking about, you know, getting the angle perfect. You come into a room and here we're presenting what it is that you see. That's a different experience than, well, here's everything. And you can walk into the room, look all around. So I think the static original Myst is probably, you know, probably a, a better experience for what they were going for.
Yeah, if I was to replay it, all I would want is the highest resolution of the original game, like something just up-rendered. That's all I would really want from it. And maybe better quality sound. I remember really liking the sound in this. Like the ambient noise was really good. So.
I thought the sound, and Robin Miller, one of the brothers, did the sound effects, and it doesn't really have songs, you know, right, as you say, it's like ambient little sequences that'll trail in and out. He did it himself on a music keyboard. There's some a clip of, you know, some of the creation in that little documentary, and it, I found it's amazing how atmospheric that is for me. Like, that was hugely atmospheric, and that was one of the things that struck me the most was the music, even though it's not actually, you know, music in the as far as songs, but yeah, and talking about the highest resolution, and we're talking about Myst and not Riven here, so it's kind of not directly targeting what we're talking about initially, but a huge part of what they had to think about and, you know, getting things looking as good as they could was, you know, not so much the resolution, which I think, you know, 640-480 was the target, and that was pretty standard, but the colors, because you absolutely were not going to use more than a 8-bit, you know, 256 color screen. And they were talking about, well, they use these adaptive palettes. And so, of course, the source is true color, and we're adapting the palettes and all these different approaches to make it best, because it just wasn't even a notion that you'd have true color or even 16-bit color.
Right, it's going to dead the heck out of it.
You know, yeah, there's no way. So it's funny how much went into that. And now, of course, you know, that's not even... memory's so cheap.
Kids today, they don't appreciate their spaceship on the beach.
Exactly. And of course, somebody ported Myst to the Apple II, I think. so bait more or less. So that one has less colors too. But anyway, so it's worth a read. Go take a look at that Riven article.
There you go.
Here's one. This is Vince Weaver's 2600 version of it. So it's not the Apple II one, but it's even more ridiculous.
Well, at least they've got 256 colors to work with.
Yeah, I suppose.
On the 2600.
Yeah.
Despite it being the 2600, I find it impressive. There's no question that you're looking at Myst.
Yeah.
And I can remember the rooms that are being rendered.
I think it benefits from the fact that I've played the game, though. I think if I hadn't, would be like, what am I looking at?
Of course, yeah.
What's this blob?
I'm pretty sure that, it would have been like a year and a half ago or 2 years ago or something, we had as a gift guide or a gift idea, a vinyl soundtrack for Myst. Like you can buy a record with,
So ooh, that would be nice.
Oh, I missed my record player. I wish they'd fix it already. My record player's been in for fixing for.
Oh, yes. It's not behind you.
No. I sit here in silence. refusing to play any other source,
staring at the wall until the next podcast.
See, I was talking about your room changing. That's what it was. I couldn't put
that's
my finger
what it was.
On
it.
Yeah,
I miss it.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
I called the shop that has it. He said, "Oh, yeah, let me call you right back." And then like he texted me, "Oh, I'm gonna be out of the office a bit. I'll get a hold of you." And I swear they're just gone. I think they're out of business. They've taken my poor little Apollo with them.
I hope not.
You go there and it's just like, you know, an empty warehouse space.
What's killing me is right now on like Facebook Marketplace, somebody in Toronto has the exact same thing, the exact same model for sale. And I'm like, is that mine? There can't be that many of those.
With a note in need of repair with your specific problem. Ouch. Well, let's hope you get it back.
I hope so too. Anyway.
I guess that's Riven. Jimmy Marr's site, The Digital Antiquarian, is always worth reading no matter what's on it.
Mm-hmm. Top notch every single time.
Yeah. Carrington, you have the next thing.
I do indeed. Atari. Remember Atari? They don't really exist anymore. They have bought Intellivision. Remember Intellivision? They don't really exist anymore. So here you go. You go to the Atari site and you see the big Intellivision logo. When I was a kid, this would have been a really big deal.
It's sort of like Pepsi buying Coke or something. Or HBO renaming itself as Max.
So Atari's saying that finally, like, the greatest rivalry in video games has been concluded with them. But neither of you are the company. You both just own a trademark. But yes, one trademark holder has purchased the trademark from another trademark holder. And the best part is, if you go on the site where they announce this thing, To mark the occasion, new Intellivision t-shirts are available starting today on Atari.com. And like, that's the entire thing that's coming out of this, is Atari will now sell Intellivision swag.
It's sad. I'm so unexcited.
And yeah, I just can't hide it.
Nope, they're uniting former competitors. Oh, yes. Now, they get the rights to all the games. There's a couple hundred titles that Atari now owns. So Atari is an Atari. Intellivision is an Intellivision. I'm old. They're old. I'm not excited about this, but it's weird. It's a thing. I was an Intellivision person when I was a kid. I had an Intellivision before I had an Atari. Yeah, with that terrible track thing that I remembered at the time really not liking. And then I got one of the Intellivision, you know, they came out with those all-in-one units that have like a bunch of games in them or whatever, like the mini ones. So I got one of those and had the controller. So I was like, these are worse than I even remember. This thing hurts my thumb. Just absolutely terrible. It's such a shame. I was a big fan of Intellivision, but that thumb thing never worked for me. I actually like went and got the Atari because I had all these Intellivision games. But nobody wants to play games with me. And television is mostly two-player games. You only do so much skiing and horse racing. Finally, you're like, I wanted someone to play Sea Battle with me. And Atari had way more single-player games. So I finally got that. Mm-hmm. Lonely nerd buys Atari.
It's funny, my neighborhood, like I have these different memory islands. It's like, so this one kid in the neighborhood had an Intellivision. The rest of us had... a number of us had the VCS, the Atari. And then this other kid had an Odyssey 2 way on the other side of the neighborhood. So I've got these little tiny samples that I never would have encountered in the store you see the Intellivision, but I never would have seen that Odyssey 2. But the Intellivision kid, I think all he was interested in was football, and I wasn't interested in that. But I remember he took, and it's probably what I would have done. He took a stick, like a twig from his yard, and glued it.
I had one of those. There was ones they sold things, replacements. I had a little joystick on
mine. No. This guy found a branch in his yard, and he broke it, and he glued an act with bark on it. He glued it to the middle of his pad. It was not straight. Like it was
aesthetic. I like it.
Yeah, and it worked because it was not until I guess Nintendo when people were like, oh, maybe if you use your thumb and it's not as big, it's not so bad.
That's funny.
But it was just this rough hewn, looked like a magic wand glued to the thing. he'd play that thing with it would fall off and he'd re-glue it. checking it out in emulation, like in the past 5 years, like there's some cool games. And
some of the games. I loved playing football. Sea Battle was amazing. I just loved, they didn't have anybody want to play the games with me.
Right. One of the coolest things, and this is what I was reading a second ago to remember the model. So it's the CPU in that thing. I was fascinated to learn not too long ago that it's the General Instruments and Honeywell worked together to create the CP1600 16-bit CPU that's in this thing. It's 16-bit. It was made in 1975. But the instruction set, the architecture of this chip is extremely similar and is presumably based on the PDP-11 mini computer. It's basically a chip version of the PDP-11, more or less. And that's what's driving the Intellivision, which I just thought was kind of interesting because I guess... You know, the VCS has a 6502 variant, and Coleco is the Z80, the ColecoVision. But yeah, it's just kind of an oddball CPU, I thought.
Jeremy in the chat said, now they can sell Atari sucks and television rules shirts and vice versa because they own both and they will print money.
That's pretty good. But put each on the front, and alternating front and back.
Yeah, vote with your dollars. That's hilarious. So I got that. Oh, and I've got my other piece of news. In addition to Atari buying Intellivision, I don't know if you guys are concerned about this, but ICQ is shutting down. Also, ICQ hasn't shut down yet. What?
I thought that was a joke. I thought it was a joke. It's still working.
Crazily, June 26th of 2024, ICQ. How was that still around?
I thought that was decades, like at least 10 years ago, at least 15 years ago.
It wasn't even functional. It is still functional. And they're saying everybody should switch over to this other chat thing that their Russian vendor also makes. mics and switch to that. Crazy that that's how is that even a thing? I remember being on ICQ.
Yeah.
Yeah. 20
I haven't
years
signed
ago.
In for a long time. I wonder if I can.
Everyone should just rush over and revive it.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I should try to log in.
It's been a long time.
That's back when I used the same password for everything. I know what the password would be. I should try it.
Yeah.
So anyway, if you currently are a big user of ICQ, look out. It's about to shut down. Send your final chats now.
Wow. There must be like 4 people in the world that are it's going to change their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
None of them who are on the web, none of them will know this is happening. They'll all be surprised by it.
Right.
They're in a basement somewhere with just that ICQ app.
Yeah.
I mostly associate my ICQ use with the client that I used, which was either Adium or Adium. I don't know.
I did too.
But yes, I remember
that. Yeah.
So this was one that I was able to do. Yeah. And I think it stopped. There was something that it stopped being able to do. I think it was it could no longer do AIM. There was something that it was blocked from doing that was important.
But I remember it did a bunch of things.
It was AIM that I used it for long ago. I remember. Yeah. That's been a while too. Is that app still existing, maintained?
It seems to be. Let's see changes. See if the change log actually 3 years ago. Okay. Well.
Okay. Well, I mean that's maybe pretty fairly recent.
I'll have to do an update. Remove ICQ.
But now I'm definitely going to have to just sign in to ICQ or see if I can at least. Maybe we can all message each other a goodbye.
Chris in the chat says he met his wife on ICQ in 1998. He should send her a message.
Yeah. Hopefully a good one.
Well, yeah, I would assume.
Yeah. By the way, I tried to sign in to ICQ, and it is asking me for my phone number, and so now I need to remember what my phone number was in 2009.
if you look top left, it says sign in with password, which is what I tried to, but I can't remember the password. And now it's too late. It won't let you try to recover your password. And there's no option for forgot password, I guess, 11th hour. So I couldn't get in. I tried it a second ago too.
Yeah. So I used the password, but it still wants a phone number.
Oh.
This is starting to sound like a little bit like a phishing scam.
I was just thinking, I think this is a Russian company that just said, oh, ICQ is shutting down. People, oh, does it still exist? Sure it does. Come and get, what password do you think you used?
Yeah. What street did you grow up on? What street did you grow up on? Yeah. It's your mother's maiden name.
Awesome.
That's it. Companies shutting down. Mostly I'm bringing brands this time.
Okay.
What about you, Paul? What have you got for us?
I didn't find very much in the short little bit of time that I had, but there was this showed up. I think Blake, you like retweeted it, and I saw this. This is Moswald.com is selling it's a power adapter for an Apple IIc that replaces the big heavy brick that you normally need for an Apple IIc. So like a regular Apple IIc, there's a sort of a laptop looking form factor for the computer, but then there's this whatever brick on a leash or whatever that you have to plug into the wall, and they yellow at different rates because they're hot, and so they look ugly and they're heavy, so this actually is just a little thing that plugs into it's like a 3D printed thing that kind of matches the design language, I guess, and it plugs into the power port and then provides a USB-C plug into that. So it's basically, it makes your 2C be USB-C compatible. So lots of C's there. See if it works. It is currently out of stock, but it is only $25 when it is not out of stock. So it's very achievable, and I am super tempted, because if I'm ever going to want to bring a 2C around, this is absolutely how I would want to power it. Mm-hmm. The 2C Plus actually moved some of that stuff inside, so the power supply is inside the case, and so that makes it a little bit more portable but heavy. You can get like a little sort of converter similar to this that can replace the switching power supply in the 2C Plus, but for an actual 2C you need something to plug it in, and I like the idea. It's surprising it took this long for it to be made by anyone, but this one looks really nice. So
I was tooting pictures just last night that I dug out my 2C and hooked it back up, got it back online, so to speak. It had been sitting dormant under a sheet for like 2 years since it was no longer had a space at my office. And I had to hunt down and had to negotiate that large power brick with equal length cords coming out of both ends of it, because it's in the middle of the cord, which makes it more awkward. You know, it's like you've got, so very, very, and it is quite heavy. It's not pleasant, but that was less than 12 hours ago. So yeah, this would be a nice thing instead. Did you see, I didn't dig, but so deep when I saw it, did you see, is it just, I guess, you know, USB-C, whatever standard voltage it can provide? I mean, do you have any, I wonder what you need, you know what I mean? Like, I wonder what kind of adapter, if you've got a USB-A on one end, or does it have to be USB-C on the other because that fits the standard? You know, did you hear anything there?
There does seem to be some kind of a description of the limitations. It says this will not work with a simple 5-volt USB supply. Okay, it says an external USB Type-C power delivery supply and Type-C cable is required. So I think what this probably means is that you could use the thing you plug your laptop in with, but you probably can't use the thing, you know, you probably can't use like one of the little tiny cubes to do this.
So for $25 bucks, I would want this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You go buy the other part of it and then you're still set. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. That would be super cool to be able to, like, unplug your MacBook and plug in your 2C, you know.
Totally. And just like you said, for size, I want this super badly. I'm sad that it is out of stock now.
Yeah. The next version will have a MagSafe adapter, so you don't pull your 2C off the desk.
Yeah.
I'm holding out for that.
That was such a good idea, and it was such a bad idea when I went away, and it was – but I almost sort of feel like – like, you wonder if we were played, you know, they take the MagSafe away and then we are so appreciative when they give it back and
yeah,
you know, they change the formula on Coke. Yeah, exactly.
It has saved me several times. It has.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually.
All right. I guess we can move on. Carrington, you have yet another news item.
I do. That sounds like me. What have I got? If you have a Windows PC and are hanging on to your Apple QuickTake. Somebody has developed JQuickTake, which is an Apple QuickTake manager. It's on GitHub. Download it. Runs it as a desktop app, and you'll launch it. It connects over Serial and lets you manage and get files off and on QuickTake, which is a difficult thing to do nowadays. So this could be a really small market for this. But if you're a QuickTake user, then holy moly, look at this for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Right? Those things, those huge binocular-like cameras, I love them. But, you know, talk about taking mist-sized images. Little 320 by 240 photographs or whatever it took.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm disparaging it, but I think it was pretty small. But anyway. Did you ever have one of these? I've used a QuickTake, but I don't think I owned one back in the day.
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't have one in the day. I have.
Do you have seven now?
I have, you know, I have the 100, 150. There's a couple of different numbers, and I have probably like three of them.
I've only ever touched the ones that look like this, that have that weird wide monocular sort of look. Yeah. But I think they also made like a more camera-shaped camera, but I've never touched those ones.
Yeah. Blake, you've got one, right? Didn't you have a...
I have a QuickTake 200. If this is the same project... I think I've read about this. If this is the same thing that I've very loosely followed, the 200, which is the later, I think there was a QuickTake 100, the 150, and the 200, and some of them were based on the Fuji camera, and I think the 100 might have been based on a Kodak, but they are, I think the support for the other ones is coming in, or at least that's the plan. If it's the same thing I'm thinking of, I might be wrong. But yeah, actually, the QuickTake 200, I not too long ago took a I guess it was about like 4 or 5 years ago, which I guess that's a little while ago. just loaded up, walked around, and took some modern pictures of stuff, you know, around the office and just neighborhoods and things like that. And yeah, it cameras have gotten better since then, but it was moving data off of the thing is crazy. You know, using a 1/8-inch weird data cable, like a headphone cable, and then you know, setting up a Windows XP machine. So this is a cool little project. If it supports the 200, I would probably have fun with it, although it has no practical, you know, I'm not taking actual pictures, but it's fun and nostalgic. That's a cool project. So yeah, I know that the 200 is based on the Fuji DX7 or the DX9. And I think the 100 was a Kodak. Apple got it from Kodak, but cool.
Okay, let's see. I think we've made it now through all of the news, and now a word from our sponsor.
ICQ.
Russian Data Farm.
Welcome to RDF.
When it comes to space games, nobody compares to Atari.
Excuse me, have you compared them to Intellivision?
Intellivision?
Sure, they've got great space games, like Intellivision Space Battle.
I didn't know.
And now there's Space Armada and the incredible Astro Smash.
I didn't know.
Here, compare for yourself. Intellivision Space Games from Mattel Electronics. Once you compare, you'll know.
Before, after. Before, after. Before, after. How do you get from before to after? Simple. Introducing the Apple QuickTake Digital Camera. It makes everything you do look better than before.
And we're back. So the host retro computing gift idea this time is, I think we've seen a version of this before in some, you know, 7 years ago gift idea, but this is it's the Core 16 interactive core memory kit, and it does not cost very much. It is a fairly simple little kit to put together, but what it has is basically a very small like 4x4 little grid of core memory.
You can see a little tiny core memory. Look at that.
Yeah, and it lights up too. I think it's on like some sort of backplane of LEDs or whatever that will.
Oh, the original indicate... core memory lit up. We'd still be using it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so you can it'll indicate to you what the magnetic orientation is of each little core thing, but and there's a video of assembling it, and so it's actually like both an electronics and a sewing project. So, because you have to weave these things together and get the little cores in there.
That's a full-featured gift.
That's right. Yeah.
Here, I got you a hobby.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think I've given this, mentioned this idea before, that like one of the worst gifts you could give somebody is a horse. It's like, here you go. There's no place to put this. It's going to cost you $1 zillion.
It might kick you. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So you can get this core64.io. There's actually a number of different things of this nature. So you can get a core64 actually has, you know, 8x8. And so you can do a larger thing, but it just costs a little bit more. And I think these all rely on Pico, like a Raspberry Pi Pico that sits in there and drives everything. Anyway, it's interesting. I think it would be fun. I thought the Core 16 was probably the most accessible gift-sized thing. But if you're
that is pretty cool. You know,
interested in the upgrade, yeah. Okay, and now, once you're done playing with your Core 16, Willy will turn to eBay auctions, and Blake, you have the first thing there.
So the item I found today, it's an item that goes with a Next computer. It's a modern creation to assist with the vintage Next Systems, Next Station, Next Cube. All of these systems had something called a sound box. And what it did was it was an external unit that had a certain amount of sound breakout hardware. It also had a keyboard interface, audio input, output. There were two variants of this. And I think looking at reading some of the details, certain ones could work with certain machines depending on the version of this sound box and the version of the ROM in the machine, and it's quite a grid to match up. But the thing is, you can't use the computer without the sound box, because there's no way to interface the keyboard to the computer, and the mouse is attached to the keyboard. There were complicating it. There were variants. There was earlier the standard Next keyboard and mouse interface, and then they switched to ADB, which was, you know, the standard Apple ADB. The sound boxes were different depending on what is interfacing with what. The thing is, you'll find systems that are for sale that don't have the sound box, and so you're not able to use it, and they'll sometimes be less expensive than they might otherwise be because you're sort of not able to use it, and sellers often don't understand, you know, what's going on, although I guess usually they do.
Or maybe they do, and they send you, now that you bought that, would you like to buy this?
Yeah,
it's a lot more expensive.
Out. Sure, why not separate it out?
Just give me your ICQ login.
Exactly. This is a modern remake. It has a modern board. It's called the Next NU-IO. It has, the interface to hook to the computer. It's got audio out in. This one board will actually interface. It works as both the ADB and the non-ADB system, so you don't have to
work with any model.
Yeah,
cool. Right. So it'll work with anyone, and you can actually switch the ROM in a certain, like, say, for instance, I have an Next Station Turbo Color. There was a refurbisher that was actually fairly local, and I found out about it. So I set up an order. I went to pick it up, and he asked if I wanted ADB or non-ADB. And I said, well, how is this machine? Are the specs the same? He's like, it's the same machine. I'm just going to switch the ROM and the sound box, and you can choose whichever you want. So you could go back and forth, theoretically. You could take, if you wanted to use the different keyboard and the different mouse, they're rather different in feel and shape and size. You could adjust your Next to, but keep this sound box. So it's not super cheap. Nor are singleton sound boxes.
Nothing Next is.
On sale on eBay, but the seller, it looks like there's six available, four sold. It's $250. It's a new, newly created thing with a Next matching, black 3D printed case that, sort of matches with the slats, the design notion of the Next. Mm-hmm. And the description talks about I'm a little confused here because my soundbox, I have the ADB soundbox, has left right audio out, which, stereo, but they're saying here that this has stereo out, which this is indicating some soundboxes don't have stereo out. So anyway, it looks like it basically enhanced, the overall system, the functioning of this device in a number of ways. You can get one and it'll work, and it actually will work with either, whatever the machine is. So seems like a good unit. If you're in a certain situation, the seller, who is,
Oh, it is Black Hole Inc. actually.
Oh, it is. Okay. It's Black Hole Inc. There you go. Computer Powwow Next. So they also sell, they're mentioning, which of course I didn't actually note that it was Black Hole Inc. that this now makes a lot more sense. They additionally sell, matching 5.4 aspect sync on green screens and other peripherals. So yes, Black Hole is for anyone that's not aware, was a long running Next supporting vendor that, has sold. I think they used to sell Next systems themselves when they were had been sold off, and they have a lot of hardware and even software, I think, that supports the Next. I actually Wasn't sure what their operating status was, but it sounds like they're still rolling. But anyway, I thought about this. This grabbed me. I thought about this because I, you know, as I mentioned, I had some flooding in the computer room here. I've now got all the systems back online. It was all except for one that I'm waiting on. But the next is, I guess the last one that I set up, and, you know, I've been playing it with it, the next station. And so, yeah, I was connecting the sound box and, you know, routing everything around. And so this was on my mind. It grabbed me when I saw it. I actually, incidentally, in playing with the Next, I noticed the CD-ROM drive, a Toshiba CD-ROM drive attached to the Next box, and it has died in that it won't, the drive door keeps opening. It won't stay shut, which means apparently it doesn't have enough torque to raise the optical platform, so it's not. And this is apparently a known thing. It's a 12 times Toshiba CD-ROM, and the 12 and 24 units would fail in this way apparently frequently. So this prompted me, and this is another device we've talked about here today. This prompted me, rather than replacing it, and it was amazing how expensive SCSI CD-ROM drives like this are on eBay. I looked for used ones, and they were like over $100, $175 for these drives, which is way more than I thought. I feel like I bought this bare unit for like $30, maybe 10 years ago, but I don't know. They're very expensive. So I bought a Blue SCSI, one of the SCSI, you know, sort of emulator devices, which this version has a Pico, Raspberry Pi Pico, and I went with the wireless option, which you could actually wirelessly communicate with it from a system across the room, load up ISO images, that kind of thing, and it'll, you know, load those, it'll appear as a volume. So I'm just going to replace it, replace the CD-ROM drive that failed on that Next with this. Of course, I had to get I got the external version, so it was the DB25 to micro DB50 adapter so that it could plug into the back of the Next. But I was able to find one of those. So anyway, this will be probably a better way to get you know, new apps and things onto the Next. But so yes, I've had Next on the mind, and this is I could see how this device, this eBay replacement sound box, would be a help, depending on what your setup is. But so there it is, 250. If you need one, you need one, and it's got some bonus features and tweaks, I guess. So that was cool. But
I forget what I put in my. I definitely have some kind of solid state drive in my Next station, but I no longer remember what I put in there. But it's something, you know. It's one of these. It's one of these.
SCSI to SD, maybe.
It was some predecessor to Blue SCSI. I think it's definitely internal, because that external port is it's a type of SCSI I don't have any adapters for at the moment. So,
I still have a spinning disc inside my Next station, and it occurred to me to you know, maybe replace that here and go wider with it, but I. Wanting to load things and maybe move it around, I went with the external. For now, I'll just leave the internal as it is. But eventually, just for life, you know, longevity, it would be good to replace that. The Next has that weird, it's that weird SCSI 2 micro adapter. I had to search. It spent about an hour to find the right adapter for that. So, yeah, I didn't have that on hand. But we'll see how it works. Which, you know, that'll be interesting. I have which maybe is what you have in there. I have a SCSI to SD, which is earlier inside internal for my Amiga 2000, and it works well, but it has less feet. You can't, you know, just throw files at it and have it mount them. It's a much older device, but anyway. So we'll see. Yeah. But
Here's my sound box.
Yep.
It is the ADV one, and it has all of the feet melted, so I've covered them with tape. That's a very common problem with these things.
It's not a face melting speaker; it's a feet melting speaker. It sounds so good to melt your feet.
I know you probably saw my toot about my melted feet. I was replacing less than a week ago. I was replacing the feet. I just use regular. I pried them off alcohol, to get that back able to be placed upon the next.
Was that the sound box specifically that you were working on?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's particularly bad. I mean,
yes.
I used to have it sitting on a piece of paper, but then it moved off the paper and then made a big mess.
So. Yeah. I did a little meme with it. The next soundbox rubber feet be like, and it's the melting face of, the Nazi from, Indiana Jones at the end.
That's one of the things we didn't mention. The whole meme thing came from 1976 as well.
I saw that. That's true.
Yeah.
But in the picture, you can see that the rubber feet had melted. It's the worst melting I've seen of any. I mean, feet on my 2C are melting. I got two modems. It's just vulcanized plastic, I guess, after 30 years. This was the nastiest. It was sitting on, like as you were saying, it was sitting on paper, but then the paper started to absorb this oil, and it was crazy. This spawned a discussion in response where people, apparently at one point someone was fabricating exactly identical rubber pads for the sound box that fit within a micron. I didn't care. I just went to CVS and got some clear feet and stuck them to the bottom. But I guess that's not a purist approach, but it was messy. It was messy.
All right. Let's see. I guess we can move on to eBay auction number two after however long that was. Carrington, you have the next thing.
I do. Oh, I do. Yes. A new keyboard for the Apple II. So it's kind of neat. Mac FX is selling a new Alps mechanical keyboard for the Apple IIe. So it's $195, sold on eBay. You can buy them in lots of 1, 2, 3, or 4 more, however much you want to spend. And it just slaps into your Apple II. So if you want a less spongy keyboard, an Apple II looks very much like an Apple IIe keyboard. I don't know if I was looking at this, I wouldn't know it was an original, except for the colors off a bit. But you get yourself a nice clicky, clackety keyboard for the Apple II if you wanted one, or the IIe, rather, specifically for the IIe. It even comes with a little clear enhanced sticker, which they don't show, having been implied in their eBay listing image. See, no enhanced. But kind of neat. $200, get yourself a brand new keyboard that's all clickety, clackety for the Apple II.
You had to zoom in to see that it was not enhanced, though.
Gotta zoom. Enhance. Zoom. Yes.
Yeah, it's funny. I guess maybe I look at these more often or whatever, but this looks like the placement of the text on the keys.
It's off,
looks
though,
very,
right?
Very different,
right?
To me. Yeah.
It's big and it's bold. Like this return, mm-hmm. Return, delete.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I mean, like if you need. I assume they must be sourcing these caps from somewhere rather than actually printing new ones.
Hand painted.
Yeah, because then they could match better. But
well, it's better than if you sit there. It's got a Windows key or whatever. At least it's a closed Apple and an open Apple. Like this should be good enough for me.
They just brought a bunch of P keys from neighboring computers, and so your keyboard is just mostly P keys.
P keys. I love the idea that it's all just one letter. Yes. Actually, if I was going to do this, though, I would have had to have a kit that lets you carve out a little bit of the plastic and then give you a proper T configuration for the arrow keys, because the whole inline arrow key thing is terrible. Mm-hmm. So here's a brand new keyboard with that same terrible arrow key lineup. It's like, oh my gosh, give me a T, baby. Give me a T, a bouncing T.
Yeah, edgy keyboardophiles will, get the... like the black keyboard with blank, no letters, but far edgier Carrington, I think, would be all P's. You're right. Like much, much better than a blank keyboard.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Definitely. Like no one, they wouldn't know what to think if you walk into the room with that thing. Like it'd be like, oh man.
Even the return key is just, it has six P's printed on it.
Six P's.
It's half three piece.
Yeah, we're out of here, man.
I love this. And then, other than the two keys, you have open P and closed P on the space bar. But like that, yeah. But I think it's just neat. Neat when new products come out for old computers. I wonder how much you can change of an old computer. And finally, people are like, look, dude, well, there's nothing here but the original case. You're like, ah, my friend, that case is not original.
That's right. The case is clear. Yeah. The keyboard is new. The motherboard is a replica.
Uh-huh.
Or it's real, but you have a an entire processor card on a card.
That's a good question. I will say, for what it's worth, I actually do kind of like the feel of the TUI's normal keyboard.
Sure.
It's
not as loud as this, no doubt, is being an oops clicky thing.
Probably because it's sitting next to an Atari 520 ST, which is the worst keyboard I have in the house. It's a terrible keyboard.
Oh, really? It's a bad keyboard, but there are worse
keyboards.
Very soft,
mushy. I mean,
I wonder, would it come with a sticker that says Apple IIP if we're going to do the all P keyboard? That'd be great. I got an Apple IIP. I'm really stuck on this Apple IIP idea. I like this.
Yeah.
An all P keyboard.
I also like the strategy of like making a keyboard feel better by putting it next to a really terrible one.
Yeah, that was of course the idea. Yes.
Well, I guess that's true. This keyboard on this Mac FX one is $200. For less than that, I could buy a really crappy keyboard and just set it beside my Apple II. And every once in a while, I'll lean over and like I'll touch an Atari 400 or a Timex Sinclair thing and go, "Oh yeah, okay, right. Sorry, Apple II, I wasn't appreciating you."
Interestingly, there's a little, I have to say this before someone makes a correction, the one of the lesser popular Atari ST models, the one with the separate keyboard, the Mega, it actually has cherry key switches, mechanical. It's one of the best keyboards around, but the standard all-in-one units are terrible. Terrible keyboards.
So says Blake.
So say we all.
That's all I got. Buy a keyboard.
All right.
I'm trying to sell you a keyboard. Did you buy it, Paul?
I did not. But I am sure I have, not quite as many keys as are appropriate for the number of TUIs that I have.
So, okay.
I probably do need at least one of a replacement keyboard somewhere in there. Okay, let's see. So what I found, I actually did not find very much this time. I feel like let the team down.
Paul.
But I don't know. I didn't spend that long looking, I suppose. But also, nothing jumped out at me. So next time it'll be even better. But one thing that came across the feed when I was looking was this set of Apple Computer Inc. Set of four children's things that were made in conjunction with Children's Television Workshop that are, at least some of them are Sesame Street themed. But so they're kind of interesting just because they are actual Apple, Apple educational software.
I've never seen these before.
I never saw this before ever. Huh.
Yeah. So they're Instant Zoo, Ernie's Quiz, Spotlight, and there's one more, Mix and Match. And in fact, actually, so some of them are, yeah, like Spotlight's in Integer Basic. It's that old.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Basic program.
Yeah. So they're kind of neat. They're kind of collectible. I mean, I'm not sure that they're fun, but, they're...
Oh, but full-on Apple Presents. Like, it's an Apple thing. Wow. Neat. Instant Zoo is kind of threatening.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, that's it. Oscar. Instant Zoo. No!
Color TV is recommended.
Hmm.
So I don't know actually. I don't know too much about the history of them, but if you look at their numbering, they had this number C2E0016 fits in the, I think it's in the same numbering scheme as the special delivery software. So they had this little operation where they would publish third party software through the special delivery software. Name. I think Atari had something similar. What was it? APX? Something like that.
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah.
Special delivery.
But so, like, Apple Writer, I think, was a special delivery software.
Okay.
Anyway, this is one of those kinds of things, except that this was a special kind of like collaboration with the Children's Television Workshop.
Hmm. Of which I am a big fan.
This actually seems pretty cheap to me.
Yeah, I was going to say.
A collectible thing.
Themed, baby. Refresh. It's been bought.
Oh, really?
I think it's sold.
Ah.
I didn't buy it. Somebody did. Did you pull the trigger?
I did. Okay. I did not, but...
How long ago had you loaded that page? Was that just like an hour ago?
It was probably when we started recording. Somewhere in the last... Yeah, somewhere in the last hour or something.
Well, that's a pretty good deal.
Did anyone in the chat get this? Yeah, I think it is. I mean, they're not, they're not super, super rare, but they're pretty rare.
But get four of them for $12 each. Yeah. I would, my guess is they're rare enough that $48 seems a bargain.
Yeah, they look in good condition. The manual or box, or is that a box or a manual?
I guess. It's like a little folder.
Yeah.
Cool. I don't know if there's any of these pictures that show it. To whoever show them open. It. Yeah. Yeah.
You denied it from Paul.
Right.
Which is the best feeling of all.
My eBay finger was starting to get itchy. I don't know. Too late. Too late. Huh, $48.
Interesting. So the next thing I have is, this is just some random thing. I had not heard of this before. It is a Apple II program called Lo and Behold. And I think it's basically just so this is a buy it now for $58 and
it's low as in low res, right? Like
I mean, it took me a little while to figure out what it was even talking about, but that is in fact what it is. It says on the front, the greatest low on earth and a ringmaster, and so you have to kind of make it through a fair amount of documentation and stuff to realize that it is a low res image editor. The greatest low on earth. I don't know. It's just so clunky somehow.
It's like
I know what clever sounds like. And it sounds kind of like this.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So, I mean, I think this feels like a real kind of like local operation. You know, somebody made a program and printed some stuff. Yeah,
but back then almost everything was right. It's just like, I don't know, it's as good as I could have done.
He clearly used a Mac to make that documentation.
It very, very Mac fonts.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah, well, I think one of the photos actually had a date, and the date was 1985, so yeah, very early Mac.
So they paid for the Mac through the sales of Lo and Behold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, but, so it's possible that this is well known. It's possible that this is well archived. It was not known to me prior to coming across this. So that was part of what drew me to it, was just that
I've definitely never heard of that at all, ever.
And that's actually all I found.
Oh, my gosh. What? Holy moly.
What? Yep.
Paul, you're letting the team down, indeed.
Yep. So no new computers, but next time.
There's the word ringmaster is thrown in. Is there any coherence to why that would be, or
maybe it's a slideshow program? I actually don't know. I didn't look. I wonder if this is. I should probably have checked on archive.org to see if it's around somewhere. But
I mean, I can move on without learning this answer.
No, you can't.
It's like lo and behold.
Okay,
and
so you
ringmaster.
Can draw Lowe's picture. Yeah. Okay. Right. So it is. It does. It is an animation program also.
Make an animation file, run an animation show. Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
So, and you can do disc work if you're tired of animation.
Do disc work.
Start sector editing randomly.
Yeah, I think there was, I forget exactly what the context was of this, but there, someone was talking about making like a snake game or a Tron game or something like that, where the boundaries weren't checked, and so like your little snake or Tron cycle could go off the edge of the screen and start like driving through actual memory.
Nice.
Corrupting the...
See how long you can go while the game still runs.
Yeah, which I mean, that actually is a pretty funny concept, just like, just randomly driving your light cycle through RAM until you hit the program itself. Okay, so now I guess we've made it to closing discussions.
We did it!
Yep. Blake, do you have any?
What do you got, Blake?
Closing thoughts?
I guess I mentioned I've got some new hardware coming in. It'll be interesting to see what I can do with that. With the Blue SCSI, I'm trying to, now that I hadn't really messed with the next station in, like, you know, 4-5 years, I guess. But now that I've rearranged everything, I want to, I found some new archives. I want to load a lot of, you know, see if I can load it up with some stuff and, you know, maybe just do some, you know, bring it up, have IRC running, you know, that kind of thing. Just play with it a bit. So that should help. And it sounds like that'll actually help me out on some other systems as well. Nice to have a little external portable SCSI thing that can, you know, do what it can do. So, and then just trying to finalize it. So I still have some boxes down in the, that I haven't moved back into this room since the water. The last thing, so I mentioned that there was one system I hadn't brought together yet, and that's the biggest, the TI-99. That's still on the dining room table, which my wife and daughter are very pleased about. It's that huge peripheral expansion bike. At least it's got the PE box, and it's not, you know, shooting a chain of peripherals off into the next room. Right.
That's the kids' table. The kids eat at that.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So
there's a little like a cup holder made of the modem.
That's right. That's right. We had a few serial ports on there so I can, you know, have a full meal
for breakfast.
Sitting on it. Yeah. That's right. But the desk that it will go on is an empty table where I've got my Vectrex over there. I have waited because even though we've got a replacement sump pump, everything's working. I'm kind of hedging my bets. I'm going to try to do this week an additional small backup battery sump pump in the event that the power goes out. These things. It's small. It sits on top of the existing, and it has like a deep throw marine battery and all this stuff. So I'm going to try to do that before I allow myself to set up the TI, because I'm never going to then take it down and get that desk out of there, because the desk the sump pump is under that desk. So I'm trying to do that.
That makes sense.
Then I'll get everything set up and then what could go wrong if I have all that level of backup? But yeah. So anyway, that's it. Just lots of stuff down in this room to keep going with. But it's fun. It's beyond the terrible and horrible. It's in the fun side of things. So the water's gone. That's it. So, for me.
All right.
How about you guys?
Carrington, any closing thoughts?
Not vintage computer-wise. The only retro thing I've done recently is I replayed the original Baldur's Gate. Just got suddenly an itch to play a game like that. And I said, I'll play Baldur's. I like Baldur's Gate 2. I remember back in the day more. But I thought, I'll play the original again. And I really dug it. It was, you know, I haven't played like a long-form game like that in a while. Whoever has time. I sat down and I plugged through it. I barely cheated. Like, for me, there was barely cheating. There's a little cheating, but barely cheating. Every once in a while, you're like, screw it. I'm just giving myself more of something. Those cheats built in, and it's really tempting to use them. And I really dug it. Boy, that game holds up. It was super fun. Look at that. That's what I did. I gamed. What a shocker.
Yeah.
Nice. What did you play it on? Like, what were you using?
I played it on I got it from GOG, and I just played it on my modern Mac.
Okay. Cool. Yeah.
I played great. It was awesome.
Excellent.
All right. Let's see. For me, I don't know. Yeah. I have. And so this coming week, I am going to be going through my office and trying to figure out what I have and put things that are alike in the same place rather than scattered across 9 different boxes. So
that'll also let you know how many you have of something. You might be surprised. Like, that's a tall stack of that one thing.
Yeah, I think there are so many times when I kind of like, I needed to move this stuff and I didn't really have the time to deal with it. And so this is a box of the things that were on that table.
I get those.
And you know, so this is now years later. I don't remember what was on that table. I don't remember why it was on that table. When at the moment you're thinking, I will always remember this. This is seared into my brain. And 2 days later, it's just gone. there's a single disc that I would like to find, and there is no chance of finding this disc. I mean, like, because
there's not no chance.
It could be anywhere. So that's one of the kinds of things I'm trying to help with, is make it so at least if I know what kind of disc it is, what company it's from, it will be in this part of the room. So
cool. That'll be good. Nice. Yeah. Well, good luck.
All right. And I think that is it for this show. So you can find the show notes for this and all the RCR shows at rcrpodcast.com. You can find the lo-fi episodes and more via Gopher at rcrpodcast.com. Somebody actually sent us an email saying, yay, thanks for the Gopher. Keep it going. So that's nice.
That is nice.
You can discuss the show in the forums at forum.vcfed.org somewhere. And I did actually just load that page for the first time in maybe 5 years. Yeah, if you are discussing us in that forum, maybe email us to tell us to go look at it. And you can email us the show, send email to the show at feedback@rcrpodcast.com. You can follow RCR on Mastodon at podcast.social at RCR Podcast. And you can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/RCR Podcast.
So much us.
There is, yes. Although I went to look, I've been saying forever, we are members of the Throwback Network. But the Throwback Network kind of disappeared around April 2023.
Oh, well,
so
we were members of the Throwback Network.
Yeah, right. It was associated with the Throwback Reviews podcast, and it was just sort of a collection of other podcasts. And I think there's a Facebook group, but that also hasn't been posted on for a year. So. No. We were proud members of the Throwback Network.
We were. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Rob's podcast. He's an excellent podcaster.
Yeah, so
I like his stuff a lot.
So stop listening to this and go listen to his. Yeah. Robo Era.
He talks about ninjas way more than we talk about ninjas, so he's better than us.
There you go.
Yeah.
I also say Robo Era. How do you not say Robo Era? Come on.
Yes. I guess we close this dance with please write a review on iTunes if you want. And until next time,
Retrocompute! Nice, that was fun. Thanks, guys.
Cool.
Thank you, chat.
Yeah, thank you, chat.
And this time I'll stop recording before tomorrow at this time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think last time Blake's recording was 18 hours or something like that.
Yeah, I left it. I was like, and I went to look at the timeline and edit it, and I saw these blips in there, and I would fast forward to silence, and then I'm like playing a game and like, damn it, and then I heard like I was moving a box and the cat wouldn't get it. I was like, damn it, cat, like all these things. You can hear me skipping around, and
it's just life of Blake.
Yeah,
but just think about this: like in 70 years or whatever, somebody will treasure that as a little bit.
Yeah, my daughter was struggling with lighting a candle in the next room, and so you hear me with this, apparently like without any other voice that you can hear, just me saying repeatedly, "Have you never used a lighter before?" I'll just be silent for an hour in this room. Have you? Is it that you've never used a lighter before?
What you want is for her to say yes, right?
Yes,
I guess.
Yes. Me and my crack pipe, we're really good at dad.
After the fact, have you never opened a beer before? Like what?
Have you never shot up black tar heroin? What kind of daughter are you?
That's right.
Okay, anyway, yes, I guess that's probably good enough for the stream.
Bye, chat.
Bye, everyone. Thanks.